Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again.
And welcome back. I know that last week we wrapped up Madison's, I'll just call it his lecture in the House of Representatives in 1792 regarding the cod fishery debates. And as I was thinking this weekend, because you get entertained, you listen to, you know, your talk show hosts and you watch your news and so forth, and very few times do you really get an epiphany. Rarely do you ever get golden nuggets that just like all of a sudden just, you know, explode in your head and you go, oh my gosh, are you kidding me? Can it be any more clear? Which is the reason why I read these documents, which is the reason why almost every day you're going to tune in when we're covering the actual documents. I'll admit it may be interesting in putting the marketing or the news into context with the Constitution, but there is a stark contrast when you are hearing the words of James Madison, James Monroe. Today, it will be George Washington. But when you hear these words for yourself, it is mind-blowing to understand how insightful these words were. These aren't just words. These are official documents that clarify the limitations, that clarify the type of government we're supposed to be governed by. And so, excuse me. One of the things that I truly believe that there's maybe some interesting things that I can come up with, and maybe I can be funny, maybe I can be sharp-witted and insightful, but that is only entertainment. If you are looking for a solution, I engage with people all the time that are absolutely fed up to their eyeballs with the problems. And they're going, there's just no way out of this. There is absolutely no way out of this. And I am here to tell you that the divine hand of providence that understood what the framers needed to put into place also understood what we would need at this point in time in the history of this republic to correct our problem. The wisdom goes that deep, that profound. There's no doubt in my mind. Everything necessary we need is within the constitutional framework and within the actual defining documents. When it comes down to it, when people say, well, the Supreme Court, they're the final art. No, they're not. They only have the ability to hear and make judgments on cases that they have jurisdiction over. There's just been no limit to what their jurisdiction is in their minds because they have never been taught the context and the limitations of jurisdiction. As it was stated during the ratification of the Constitution, I cannot impress upon you the importance of the ratification debates. They are what defined the terms of the contract, or what we call the Constitution. So, anywho, there's lots of things to go into, but one of the most important things I always have to cover is that this show is also sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org as well as RepublicReview.org. You are listening maybe to the most boring show there is on the airwaves and streaming today. But this show is providing you the academic evidence necessary in proving our case that the federal government is in non-compliance to the Constitution. Do you want to fix the problem or do you want to be entertained? Because I concede that I may not be the most entertaining person behind the microphone, but I'm going to give you all the weapons necessary to restore our constitutional republic and get corruption out of our government. And I'll talk to you more about that in just a minute. But the fact of the matter is, this is where the solution is being purported. This is where we are promulgating the processes and the necessary steps in solving our corrupt, and I'll just use the term, it's a four-letter word, my friends, and it's a four-letter word for its obvious reason, evil. Our evil government that has gone well outside what it is supposed to do. And like as a child, I used to say, they're making it up as they go along. And that's what they're doing. And they have plans in getting rid of our Constitution. Washington understood this, and that's why we're going to go into Washington's farewell address. This may not be necessarily a profound founding document, but it was an official act that George Washington handed the Republic in giving them the final warnings necessary of how they needed to proceed as he was the first president of the United States. And so we don't get a lot of farewell comments in the official capacity, but these farewell comments are harmonious and congruent to the intent and spirit of the Constitution as well as the ratification debates. There was no sleight of hand that I'm aware of, and if it pops out, I will tell you as we go through this. I will editorialize. But the fact of the matter is that we go through these documents to, it's about overwhelming you. It's not like we've got one or two nuggets. We have a pile of rocks and boulders to bury our enemy who is using our Constitution to fulfill their destiny in subjugating us and the rest of mankind. So, our listen line number, and I want you to understand that if you cannot stream on a particular day, dial us up. Listen to the listen line. You'll get the nuggets necessary. Now, we may repeat these as I read these differently and so forth and editorialize differently, as you'll find. But the fact of the matter is that almost every show, I try to make sure, except when I go through the marketing. The only thing is, it's kind of like mind-blowing explosions of, you know, what is it going to take? How bad does it have to get before you actually start taking action on the empirical evidence I'm providing you and start demanding compliance to the Constitution? If you do not demand compliance to the Constitution, it's like dealing with the people that are supporting the Convention of States. Every time I engage them, they go away because the only time I have a Convention of States person really step up and go, wow, you know, you're absolutely right, is those are the people that are real patriots. Those people who are completely vested in the process so that some opportunity will befall them and an opportunity to become a recipient of corruption, a recipient of money and power and position. Those are the ones that will just go away when they realize that they have no argument against complying to the Constitution. Because bottom line, we do not need any more words to our Constitution. Every single problem that we are dealing with today with our federal government and even our state governments is their failure to comply with their constitutions. This is why we're just focused. We're myopically focused on fixing the problem. So that listen line number is 605-562-4209. I'll say it again. The listen line number is 605 562-4209. Now, I understand that everybody is looking at the swamp. The swamp extends into states, it extends into counties, and it is just, it's like spreading the plague. It is killing us. And there's an easy way to take control of our governors. And when I say governors, I don't mean state governors. I mean those people who are elected officials who are governing us. Remember, they govern us at the consent of the governed. And that means we're letting them do this because we're not demanding their compliance. In an engagement I had in a Wyoming forum last night, I pointed out that if we want, because one of the things that the Wyoming voters have a problem with is that their, excuse me, their attorney general is appointed. And they go, well, you know, we want to be able to elect our attorney general so they're accountable to the people. And what I did was I you know, sometimes you have to stop, you have to kind of take, you know, a deep breath, regroup and go, okay, hold on. Really? Because it seems like, and the problem is we've been programmed into democracy and that paradigm, that it seems like what people want to do is they want to pull it to the general elections and the elections of the people. There's a huge problem with that. And I'll get to that when we come back, and we will get into the George Washington farewell address. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in, and let's get on with the dialogue.
Anyway, in my conversation or engagement last night in a Wyoming voter forum, there was a lot of frustration, you can tell, by those who were talking about the problems they had with their attorney general because he was appointed, or they're appointed instead of being elected by the people. And I, you know, didn't want to dig in my heels or anything else. I'm just one person, and so I just gave them my unsolicited opinion on what the real problem is. because the real problem goes right back to we not demanding that they comply to our Constitution. I do not believe that we have to elect, and I believe democracies are far more dangerous than a Republican form of government. Now, I threw it out there that we should be electing our representatives, our sovereigns. In the House of Representatives, that's who we should elect. At the county level, we should be electing our sovereigns at the county level who represent us, which would be our county commissioners or supervisors. And at the national level, we represent, you know, our representative is in the House of Representatives, and that's who we should vote for. Now, we believe in a dual sovereign government. Now, there is no such thing as a senator at the county level, because at that point, it is literally just a government representing the people. So that's why we only have one house. We do not have a bicameral house of governing. We have representatives of the people. But at the state level, we need to have the counties who our sovereigns actually send as our senators. In other words, the county commissioners should be the ones who are appointing the senator that goes and represents the county in the states, just like the way it is supposed to be if we got rid of the 17th Amendment, where the state legislatures nominate, because we believe in dual sovereignty. We the people are the sovereigns, but we also elect sovereigns to govern us. And so those sovereigns who govern us need to make sure that they're nominating and actually choosing the best person to go represent their interest in government to counter the people and the demands of supposedly democracy. It is the checks and balances, because the county commissioners know what is going on throughout the entire county, where you may only have one particular myopic vision of the coastal region of your county and have no clue to what's going on in the hinterland, you know, where they're maybe growing food or mining or whatever they're doing. We kind of, you know, we're community-based, and we kind of understand our local community, but we do not understand the grandeur and all of the issues of the county. So the county commissioners or supervisors need to be the ones who identify who should be representing them and appoint them to become senators at the state level. Now, the fact of the matter is that that's it. We should not be electing our governors, nor should we be electing our executives at the state and the national level. We should be electing electors who choose who our governor should be and who choose who our president should be per the Constitution of the United States. Now, I know that people say, well, you know, we want that. We want to be able to, you know what, let's let that go, because we actually have proven that we're far better served. Look at Washington, look at Jefferson. Those men were not elected from a popular election. James Madison, he was not elected from a popular election. His election was literally from the electors. We should not be allowing the party to have control over who is going to govern us. I mean, haven't you been fed up enough when the party keeps on just promoting, well, you've been such a loyalist, Bob Dole, you're going to become our nominee. We're nominating you and giving you a shot at it. Are you kidding? He's the best? No, we need and deserve the best, and the electors should be free and unencumbered by parties and the rest of those types of influences, so that we can actually have the best president to represent our republic. So anyway, I kind of pointed out this whole concept, and then I got a little feedback that there were some problems with this, and I go, actually not. But what has to happen is we, the people, have to take control. And there are mechanisms. And one of the first things that we need to start doing is we need to demand our representatives sign pledges of resignation. I mean, it's gotten to the point, folks, where if you cannot count on them to do the right thing, then you need to make them sign a piece of paper that they will do the right thing. And if they don't, then you kick them out and you demand that they resign and you take them to court because they signed an agreement to resign. And that is a pledge that they make to their constituents who are willingly giving them their vote because they have made a pledge of honor, integrity, and so forth, that they will honor and support the Constitution. This is how we restore both honor, integrity into our system again, because oaths mean nothing anymore. And so one of the first things we have to demand that our sovereigns at all levels, at the county level, at the state level, and at the national level, they implement Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. In other words, they need to put the process of how the people remove their governors, those who are governing them, how we remove them from office. Because all it should take is one person to say, this person has violated their oath of office, they violated their pledge, because they have violated the Constitution. And with that, with evidence of violating the Constitution, well, how can somebody violate the Constitution? Well, one great way of doing it is by taking money that is unconstitutional, by voting for spending money that is unconstitutional. In other words, if you receive money from the state into the county and you realize that this is federal money that comes with strings and it's for building roads, and you know, because we teach you here that the federal government has no role, responsibility, or power delegated to it in building roads, their only responsibility is a post road. This road you're working on is not a post road. It's an inner city road or a county highway or a state highway, then you have violated the Constitution and you should resign. You know what? I don't care how many people we go through. I don't care how many people we spit out. I believe that if we demand honor and integrity and that people must honor their oaths of office in supporting the Constitution, we will be on a quick path of restoring our constitutional republic. It's that simple, because it's all about compliance. Remember, over 95% of the problems we are dealing with has everything to do with non-compliance to the Constitution. And if you can fathom that, and you're fed up with all of these problems, then you have to get on board. You have to. If not, you're just as culpable. You're just as guilty. You have blood on your hands regarding the problem. Now, with that, I hope we get to a point where honor and integrity means more to a man than life itself, like it used to. And I'd love to see us getting back into the days of duels, where people, you know, you want to insult my, you try to impugn my character, and you want to insult me and dishonor me? Okay, then I will meet you out, and we will duel to determine, you know, to settle this score. And so, you know what, if you want to really, really attack somebody, you better have some evidence, and you better be able to solve the problem immediately, because I believe that standing up for one's honor and integrity is a critical part of society. We have really lost our soul when all of a sudden we don't care if we get caught lying anymore. And that's our politicians, and that is our society today. We need to change those morals. But those morals will not change until we, the governed, demand compliance to the Constitution, and we demand the utmost from our governors, if you understand. Now, Washington starts his address, and this is in 1796, with friends and citizens, because in all honesty, he was a very down-to-earth man. I mean, he respected everybody. And as a matter of fact, if you read some of the biographies of this man, he treated his slaves like they were family compared to those soldiers who worked for him. I mean, he had less problems shooting a deserter in the back than, and he would never even think of doing that to a slave that ran away. He would plead with them because he knew what they might be facing by being mastered by somebody else. So anyway, we will be right back after these two promos and start in with the farewell address of George Washington.
Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
So as we get started into George Washington's farewell address, because the first thing he talks about is the elector process or the electoral college and that election process. And as most people know, George Washington was unanimously elected twice. And so if you understand what significance that is, I mean, if you go to the Electoral College, you know, every vote was cast for him. There was only one other point in time in the history of our republic where another man was unanimously voted and a vote was changed by that person when they realized that it was going to be a unanimous election. They changed their vote for somebody else. And that person was James Monroe. Now, James Monroe was a framer. He was an anti-federalist. He didn't understand, but as he grasped and understood, he became a huge champion for our constitutional republic. But I want to put this into context because if you understand the reverence that the people had for George Washington, there was equal reverence for the man called James Madison and James Monroe. Even Thomas Jefferson. Now, Thomas Jefferson had a pretty bloody bout in going and unseating John Adams, but in his second election, it was pretty solid that he won that. Now, we already know that we have a monument to the most revered president, George Washington. But where is the monument to our second most revered president, which was James Monroe, who, like I said, was almost unanimously elected? We have not one. And that goes the same with the father of the Constitution, somebody that actually gave us and supported the system and taught more of our governors of how to operate this system. And both of these men really don't have a monument. And that was really more because Madison for himself said, we do not, and we're just men, we do not deserve monuments. What we should be teaching is not, you know, the people, but the principles. Anyway, so as I go into this diatribe of George Washington as talking about the elections, I wanted to put it into context that he wasn't the only one that was unanimously elected. It's just that there was one election that was altered by a conscious decision so that James Monroe was not considered a unanimous election. Anyway, this is what he says in paragraph one. The period for a new election of a citizen to administer the executive government of the United States being not far distant, and the time actually arrived when your thoughts must be employed in designating the person who is to be clothed with that important trust. It appears to me proper, especially as it may conduce to a more distinct expression of the public voice, that I should now apprise you of the resolution I had formed to decline being considered among the number of those out of whom a choice is to be made. So in other words, he's basically starting off saying, I want you to know that I actually put out a resolution not to vote for me. I beg you at the same time to do me the justice to be assured that this resolution has not been taken without a strict regard to all the considerations appertaining to the relation which binds a dutiful citizen to his country, and that in withdrawing the tender of service which silence in my situation might imply, I am influenced by no diminution of zeal for your future interest, no deficiency of grateful respect for your past kindness, but am supported by a full conviction that the step is compatible with both. The acceptance of and continuance hitherto in the office to which your suffrages have twice called me have been a uniform sacrifice of inclination to the opinion of duty to a difference for what appeared to be your desire. I constantly hoped that it would have been much earlier in my power, constantly with the motives which I am not at liberty to disregard, to return to that retirement from which I had been reluctantly drawn. In other words, he didn't go necessarily as his desire to serve as president. The strength of my inclination to do this previous to the last election had even led to the preparation of an address to declare to you, but mature reflection on the then perplexed and critical posture of our affairs with foreign nations and the unanimous advice of persons entitled to my confidence impelled me to abandon the idea of not running, and I'm adding this last part, to not run again. In other words, when he was after he had done his first term, he actually did not want to become president again. He was very clear that he was fed up with the politics. And it was Madison who actually wrote this farewell address. And I say that because even though there's people out there that are saying Hamilton wrote this because Madison and Washington had a falling out, there's no doubt in my mind that Washington possibly went to Hamilton to say, what do you think I ought to say? And if you read the words in this, there are words that Hamilton would never have said. And that's towards the end regarding the amendments and the implied powers and so forth. Because I believe Hamilton, because he had always shown his sleight of hand, even during the Federalist Papers, that, oh, well, you know, he supported the centralizing of powers and the aggrandizing of government. And I believe that would have been the undertone of Washington's farewell address if Hamilton actually wrote it. There is nowhere in Hamilton's post-Federalist Papers that ever indicate that he had a high regard for the amendment process, that he had a high regard for following the limited constraints on the federal government. He was constantly working, and that's why John Marshall was his protege, in helping the Supreme Court aggrandize and using that position in helping aggrandize the federal government by using the rulings and their and creating and injecting precedents in case law. So anyway, the fourth paragraph, Washington goes on and says, I rejoice that the state of your concerns, external as well as internal, no longer renders the pursuit of inclination incompatible with the sentiment of duty or propriety, and am persuaded, whatever partially may be retained for my services, that in the present circumstances of our country, you will not disapprove my determination to retire. The impressions that with which I first undertook the arduous trust were explained on the proper occasion. In the discharge of this trust, I will only say that I have, with good intentions, contributed towards the organization and administration of government the best exertions of which a very fallible judgment was not capable. Not conscious, not unconscious, in the outset of the inferiority of my qualifications, obviously he was a very honest man, experience in my own eyes, perhaps still more in the eyes of others, has strengthened the motives to diffidence of myself, and every day the increasing weight of years admonishes me more and more that the shade of retirement is as necessary to me as it will be welcome, satisfied that if any circumstance has or have given particular value to my services, they were temporary. I have the consolation to believe that while choice and prudence invite me to quit the political scene, patriotism does not forbid it. Interesting. And you realize that Washington didn't live much longer after he retired, because by the time within the next 4 years, Washington had already passed and the nation had already mourned. Number six, in looking forward to the moment which is intended to terminate the career of my public life, my feelings do not permit me to suspend the deep acknowledgement of that debt of gratitude which I owe to my beloved country, for the many honors it has conferred upon me, still more for the steadfast confidence with which it has supported me, and for the opportunities I have thence enjoyed of manifesting my inviolable attachment by services faithful and preserving, though in usefulness unequal to my zeal. Its benefits have resulted in our country from these services. Let it always be remembered to your praise and as an instructive example in our annals that under a circumstance in which the passions agitated in every direction were liable to mislead amidst appearances sometimes dubious, vicissitudes of fortune often discouraging in situations in which unfrequently want of success has countenanced the spirit of criticism. And we'll take a break right there as we go into the next two promos, and we'll be right back with the finishing up of paragraph six. Thank you so much.
Folks, Red State Talk Radio has brought back its monthly newsletter. I know everyone gets a lot of emails, but this is not a daily or weekly newsletter. It's a monthly newsletter. So you will not be overwhelmed with a plethora of emails from Red State Talk Radio. Come on, it's only once a month. I'll be contributing a constitutional perspective to one of the current issues to help everyone see an alternative perspective, or what I believe would be a framer's perspective regarding the issue to help us maintain a constitutional paradigm. I will also provide information regarding a significant historical context to the time of year so that we can remember our history, so we will not be doomed to repeat the inevitable failings from forgetting our past and origins. Just go to Red State Talk Radio and sign up for the newsletter. This way you can get a focused view of what is going on in the Republic as well as what is going on at Red State Talk Radio. Thank you.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
Okay, so let's kind of repeat some of this. Amidst appearances, sometimes dubious, vicissitudes of fortune, often discouraging in situations in which not unfrequently want of success has countenanced the spirit of criticism. The constancy of your support was the essential prop of the efforts and a guarantee of the plans by which they were effected. Profoundly penetrated with this idea, I shall carry it with me to the grave as a strong incitement to unceasing vows that heaven may continue to you the choicest tokens of its beneficence, that your union and brotherly affection may perpetual, that the free constitution, which is the work of your hands, may be sacredly maintained, that its administration in every department may be stamped with wisdom and virtue, that in fine the happiness of the people of these states under the auspices of liberty may be made complete by so careful a preservation and so prudent a use of this blessing as will acquire to them the glory of recommending it to the applause, the affection, and adoption of every nation which is yet a stranger to it. Now, I will say this. There's no doubt that this nation had a brotherhood. It was a family of liberty. There was that brotherly connection that the people of this nation loved liberty. And even though at the Revolutionary War, most people did not understand, that's why the Revolutionary War was supported by a few, many people afterwards started understanding, going down the path of individual liberty and individual sovereignty, they were on the verge of making history because they were creating a government that was allowing them to be free from the encumbrances of a centralized national government and in creating even limited state governments, and you know, allowing, as Jefferson called it, a distributive form of governing, to where most decisions were made at the local level by your county commissioners or your county supervisors, and that the state would have a little bit, you know, of greater scale of larger, you know, governing. And what I mean by that is for the greater scale of the state, but not in the minutia of everything you were doing. Most all the governing was being done down at the county level. And so as we got further away from the local vicinages or the vicinity of where you lived, you would find that there would be less and less government, which is why the state was very involved in giving money to churches so that the churches could take care of the compassionate services throughout the disparate areas of the state. But anyway, let me get back to what Washington was saying in paragraph 7. He says, "Here, perhaps I ought to stop, but a solicitude for your welfare, which cannot end but with my life and the apprehension of danger, natural to that solicitude, urge me on an occasion like the present to offer you my solemn contemplation and to recommend to your frequent review some sentiments which are the result of much reflection, of no inconsiderable observation, and which appear to me all important to the permanency of your felicity as a people. There will be offered to you with the more freedom, as you can only see in them the disinterested warnings of a parting friend, who can possibly have no personal motive to bias his counsel, nor can I forget, as an encouragement to it, your indulgent reception of my sentiments on a former and not dissimilar occasion." Now, I'm going to stop right here, because he's really saying that he, you know, going, you know, into his retirement, he's giving you this advice, but it's not based on any biases, because there's nothing for him to gain. However, this is because he was a leader, not managing an agenda. Remember, managers manage agendas, but leaders don't. Leaders do what is good for the common principles and the common core of the people. And so we have presidents today that are grinders for the agenda, like Obama, like the Clintons, and so forth. And it's all about global governance. And you can tell what their agenda is. It has nothing to do with individual liberty, as this man was a true champion of individual liberty. So when people come out and start talking about things and the way they talk, you can tell exactly what their agenda is. And here is a leader who is giving us warnings of how and what we need to do to guard our liberties. Paragraph 8. It's a very short one. It's one sentence. "Interwoven as is the love of liberty with every ligament of your hearts, no recommendation of mine is necessary to fortify or confirm the attachment. The unity," this is paragraph 9, "the unity of government which constitutes you one people is now dear to you. It is justly so, for it is a main pillar in the edifice of your real independence, the support of your tranquility at home, your peace abroad, of your safety, of your posterity, of that very liberty which you so highly prize. But as it is easy to foresee that from different causes and from different quarters, much pains will be taken, many artifices employed to weaken in your minds the conviction of this truth, as this is the point in your political fortress against which the batteries of internal and external enemies will be most constantly and actively, through often covertly and insidiously, directed, it is of infinite moment that you should properly estimate the immense value of your national union to your collective and individual happiness, that you should cherish a cordial, habitual, and immovable attachment to it, accustomed to yourselves to think and speak of it as the palladium of your political safety and prosperity, watching for its preservation with jealous anxiety, discountenancing whatever may suggest even a suspicion that it can, in any event, be abandoned, and indignantly frowning upon the first dawning of every attempt to alienate any portion of our country from the rest or to enfeeble the sacred ties which now link together the various parts. I want you to understand what he was just saying. He was basically saying that if you and we do not maintain our affinity and love for our liberty, and when he was talking about this new national government, he wasn't talking about an unlimited. The focus was that we had to have a love for its limitations, that we are truly being governed by ourselves at the closest level to our lives and to our dwellings, the counties, that we were not in this big, huge collective board. They only took care of national security, the immigration of folks after 1808 and so forth. I mean, if you look at how little they did for the people and how well we thrived under that model, and as they started chipping away and chipping away, they have only made it worse. So, as we move forward, I've barely got a minute, and so I'll finish this with, and this is where he starts getting into religion. For this, you have every inducement of sympathy and interest. Citizens by birth or choice of a common country, that country has a right to concentrate your affections. The name of American, which belongs to you in your national capacity, must always exalt the just pride of patriotism more than any appellation derived from local discriminations. With slight shades of difference, you have the same religion, manners, habits, and political principles. You have in a common cause fought and triumphed together. The independence and liberty you possess are the work of joint councils and joint efforts of common dangers, sufferings, and successes. My friends, I am here to tell you that, because I don't have enough time to finish going into paragraph 11 and beyond, I'm here to tell you that this man may not have been a genius, but his intelligence and his leadership, you know, is, I don't think, measured by very many people who have ever lived and walked on the face of the earth. And there was a common thread during the creation of this Constitutional Republic that they needed George Washington to lead this country under this new banner of a Constitutional Republic. And that's one of the things that was out in Virginia's ratification debates, that had they not joined the Union, they would not be able to bestow this nation with its greatest leader. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're reclaiming the Republic. And in our next episode, we will have more of Washington's farewell address. God bless. I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to, so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.